Representantes do Parlamento e do Estado da Palestina, caro Dr. Nabil Chad, queria, em meu nome pessoal, em nome da Comissão, transmitir-lhe o gosto e a honra que temos em recebê-lo hoje aqui. A questão do Estado da Palestina para o Estado português, para o Governo e para o Parlamento português, é uma questão de grande consenso nacional, uma vez que todos estamos identificados na defesa do Estado da Palestina, na coexistência entre dois Estados, e todos estamos identificados também numa posição política de recusa da política de colonato pelo Estado de Israel. Dr. Nabil Chad conhece certamente as posições últimas do Estado português e do Governo português na Organização das Nações Unidas quanto a esta matéria. Estamos todos, por isso, muito identificados nos objetivos de contribuir para a paz e para o desenvolvimento dessa região do Médio Oriente. E por isso, queria-lhe transmitir os nossos cumprimentos e o interesse que temos em saber como as coisas têm evoluído da vossa parte e no contexto da procura da paz e do equilíbrio geoestratégico tão importante nessa zona do planeta e uma zona que nos é muito próxima e em relação à qual temos grandes afinidades históricas, sociais e políticas. Estamos aqui para receber todos e para dialogar todos os representantes de todos os grupos parlamentares. Com exceção de um partido que, por certo, está ausente por dificuldades de organização interna, presumo. Por isso, dou-lhe a palavra de imediato.
First of all, I'd like to express my happiness for being here. There's something very unusual to me about the weather at this time. And I find it as warm and as refreshing and as beautiful as I've ever seen it. You know, even in the Mediterranean inside, and I lived in many coastal cities. I lived in Jaffa and Gaza, Palestine, in Alexandria, Egypt, and in Beirut, Lebanon. This weather would be something like March or October, but not early February. But it was really as warm as the hearts of my Portuguese friends were warm, and it gave me a very happy moment the last 2 days. It was not the first time I'm in Lisbon. I came several times before. I was foreign minister for 14 years, so I came to Lisbon at least twice a year when I was minister. That ended in 2006, so I've been some time short of travel. But I've attended two Euromed foreign ministerial meetings here and others, and I do like your town, and I do like your people, and I do feel very close to Portugal. So I'm very happy you gave me the opportunity to see all of you. We are grateful to all of Portugal for a continued support of the right of the Palestinian people to independence, freedom, statehood, and peace. And of course, we are equally happy for the vote, the positive vote you have given the United Nations in accepting the state of Palestine as a observer member of the United Nations. Symbolic as it is, but it has important strategic value for our people and for the support it deserves and gets from the international community. I must say that Portugal was not just a regular voter, but you lobbied for us inside the EU. I mean, there was a time when Mrs. Ashton wanted to unify the Europeans by asking them to abstain from voting on our issue. And I know that Portugal was one of the first countries to say, no, Mrs. Ashton, we will vote for the Palestinians, whatever the decision of the other European countries. I know that you were joined by two other small countries, but we are a very small country ourselves, Ireland and Luxembourg. I mean, it feels good sometimes that smaller countries of Europe stand by our right and stand by real peace and eventually prevail. Because actually only one country in Europe voted against us, the Czech Republic. And we think as a result, the president lost in the election. He was the foreign minister, actually. The foreign minister ran for presidential election and lost. It's very funny because the Czech Republic recognizes the state of Palestine fully, and we have a full embassy in Prague. We don't have a representation. We have a full embassy under the Vienna Conventions. And I recall as a foreign minister, I used to be received as a foreign minister of an independent country. But I know the pressures, and I know all the way sometimes decisions are made. In general, we are grateful to Portugal. We are grateful to Europe, because in the general sense, Europe stood by us. And I know that this is a reflection also, not only of diplomatic policy, but it's a reflection of a huge public opinion supporting the right of the Palestinians. In a country like Germany, which I know because of historical reason, sometimes finds it difficult to vote in a way that doesn't please Israel, 74% of the public of Germany in a public opinion poll supported the right of the Palestinians to an independent state, a matter that was not lost on Mrs. Merkel, who at least decided not to vote against and to abstain from voting, respecting the public opinion of the German people for the rights of the Palestinians. So this is in the plus side. Since I'm an optimist, I'll start with good news, and then I'll go to the more difficult one. I just had a call from our president, who arrives in Cairo today, President Abbas. And he's quite optimistic that the talks in Cairo with the Hamas promises a quick return to elections, democracy, and unity, which is really, to us, is something of great importance. To me, a democracy really has two constituencies. One, pluralism, free competition for elections and free elections, rule of law, separation of powers, the right to free speech. This is one side. But the other side is the ability of a democracy to create inclusiveness, consensus and unity. You cannot run a democracy with people just not accepting each other and fighting each other and separating all the time. You need a democracy where the loser accepts the rule of the majority and continues to work within the inclusive consensus until he has another chance of running again for elections and hopefully winning what he lost in the first place. And I think that is the lesson that our people has learned, and that is the lesson that I hope our brothers in the Arab Spring are going to learn as well. I cannot tell you how delighted I was when the Arab Spring started in Tunisia and in Egypt. I had lived as a refugee in Egypt most of my life, and therefore I know the importance of Egypt, a country of 92 million people living on a very thin stretch around the River Nile and living together for 10,000 years, 5,400 of them as one united country, with never subjected to secessions based on religion or sect or ethnic origin, language or anything. That is a very unusual history, which made the Egyptians an important backbone of stability in the Arab world. But obviously, to shake up a 60-year military autocracy, you really, and it started totally non-violently, at least from the demonstrators, by young people who were yearning for freedom and for dignity and social justice and democracy, that it creates immediately a change in the balance and in which several forces compete for taking over what the autocrat, the tyrant, has been maintaining without popular representation. And that is what's happening in Egypt and the other Arab countries. This competition between the Islamist political vision and the liberal and social democratic vision, that is the secular vision. Of course, the Arab world is religious, but so you are too. I mean, Catholicism is important in your countries, but that still creates some separation between church and state, and that creates more freedom for people to be religious or to be not religious without really having this a major part in determining the unity of the country. And I think that is what the Arab Springers are learning. It's going to take some time, but I think the future is much brighter looking. I keep thinking of Latin America because I led the Palestinian drive to get Latin American support for our recognition in the year 2010. And of course, we were highly helped by a country that was always Portuguese in origin, Brazil. And I had a very good friend in Lula da Silva from very old days when he was a labor leader. And he helped tremendously in leading the Latin American countries into supporting the Palestinian people. But also, must admit, also President Kirchner and then Mrs. Kirchner in Argentina, but also Mr. Mujica in Uruguay, and many people of different party qualifications. Why? Because Latin America has been through a spring, in my mind, quite similar to the Arab Spring today. Go back 20 years, and the dictators, the military dictators who ran Latin America, who threw opposition people from aeroplanes into the ocean, and who really were extremely tough in frustrating their people's desire for freedom, also, as a result, became to a great extent subject to domination by American companies and the Pentagon, and they had very little economic development and very little political. independence. But when they got rid of the dictators, and when the sunshine of democracy came into Latin America, they grew democratically, they grew economically, and they become more independent politically. They're not enemies of the United States, but they are more independent of decision-making that was always made in Washington. And as a result, they became global players. And also, because they suffered so much from denial of human rights, they support very much the human rights of the Palestinian people far away from Latin America. And I tell you, when 32 Latin American countries vote for Palestine, that is really now the biggest group of people, even more than the Africans or the Asians who have been our supporters for a long time. So whenever I think of Brazil, I think also of Portugal. And I'll tell you a story. In 2010, the Prime Minister of Canada came to lobby that we vote for Canada against Portugal in the membership of the Security Council. And we were in New York at the time attending the General Assembly meeting. Our president, of course, like all presidents, must be very diplomatic. So he said, we will consider this and we will look into it. And also I said, Mr. President, would you allow me to be a little bit more frank? He looked at me, gave me a chance. I said, Mr. Prime Minister, what do you think you have done more than Portugal in supporting us that deserves that we vote for you and not for Portugal? He could not answer. He could not answer. And actually, Canada voted against the decision for the state of Palestine as a member. But, I mean, thinking of voting for Canada against the Portugal is something that I thought the Prime Minister of Canada ought to really know the truth. All right, so let's go back to the situation, the bad news. The good news is that we feel the world is with us. We are not alone. We feel Europe in particular is with us. And I tell you, we had a colonial history with Europe. By the way, coming into this room, I saw the Lazar paintings of the slaves bowing meekishly in front of the Portuguese generals. And I know, I mean, we had a colonial history past, but it's changed. Europe today, Portugal today, is not the Portugal of General Lazar and General Franco. I mean, things have changed. There is now, you have created a unity that deserved a Nobel Prize. And no other united group got a Nobel Prize but the European Union. And Portugal has moved into democracy, into freedom, and also moved into significant relations with the Arab world, not only for Palestine, but also for the Arab world, with which we had a colonial past here. But obviously, we are beyond that colonial past. And I think what you remember today of the Arab occupation of Portugal is maybe the River Tage, which is an Arabic name, and many other Arabic names, I understand, in the south of Portugal in particular, but also in many parts of Spain. We are, once again, very close friends, and Europe to us is the future. And I should think that the Arab world and Palestine at the center is a future as much as a present concern for Europe. Your risk does not come from the Soviet Union anymore. Your risks come from the south. And therefore, your friends also should come from the past, from the south. Your alliances should come from the south. Because that's the way we build together a much better relationship, a much more peaceful and beautiful little lake called the Mediterranean. And I think this is really where we'd like to see support. We would like to see Europe more assertive in pushing for its role to make peace in the Middle East. The Americans can afford to live for a while without peace in the Middle East. Actually, the Americans lived for a while with a brutal use of open power in Iraq and Afghanistan and so many other places. And I don't think that reaped really much advantage for the building of the future of the Arab world or of Arab-American relations. I think it is vital that Europe plays a significant role, and Europe can. I keep telling my European friends, the only serious peace treaty we signed with Israel is called the Oslo Agreement. Okay, Oslo is not part of the European Union, but Norway is an important European country that was able to do between us and the Israelis what the Americans have not succeeded in doing. The single most important political agreement that led to Oslo is the Geneva Convention, the Madrid Convention, close by to you, in 1991. In October of 1991, it was the Madrid meeting, the Madrid summit, that created all the possibility of the peace process. All right, it wasn't only Europe at the time, because the Madrid Agreement came as a result of the collapse of the Soviet Union, the end of the Cold War, the defeat of Saddam Hussein, the presence of American gunboats in the Gulf protecting their oil. I mean, the world has changed. But it was Madrid, a European city that housed that agreement, that conference that created the possibility for peace between us. And if I want to go, the Barcelona Agreement was the first real economic agreement supporting the creation of peace in our area. If I go further, it's in Europe that most of these, what we call second track negotiations, took place that prepared the road. I have been negotiating with Israelis for the last 50 years. I am beyond 70 now, so I don't like to cover up my age, but I spent 50 years of those 70 years trying to negotiate for peace with the Israelis. And today, I'm sorry to tell you that that's the bad news. There is no peace process today. Simply because the Israelis, at the present time, with their present government, and I talk about elections in a minute, but with their present government, think they are unaccountable, that they can do whatever they want. They can ignore the agreements we sign. Not one aspect of the Oslo Agreement is respected today. By the way, Oslo Agreement was signed in the White House in Washington. So it's not only a European agreement, but also an American agreement, in which the Russians were also present and the United Nations was also present. And the Security Council endorsed the Oslo Agreement, but the Israelis do not implement it. The Israelis do not implement the roadmap that was agreed to and accepted by the Israelis and the Palestinians by the quartet made of the European Union, the Russian Federation, the United Nations, and the United States. And therefore, instead of implementing, after 20 years, Oslo is 20 years old this year, instead of implementing what we had agreed, the Israelis just kept encroaching, expanding, deepening their colonization by expropriating Palestinian land and creating settlements and de-Arabizing the whole area of Jerusalem and extending it east, west, south, and north to become today almost a third of the West Bank, they call Greater Jerusalem, in which they don't want any Arab, Palestinian, Christian, or Muslim to live or to own land or to make any real living in that part of the world. And therefore, you don't negotiate. I mean, sometimes I tell my American friends, we are a little bit more intelligent than rats. You know, rats are used for experiment, and they put a rat in a maze, and they electrify one side of the maze, and they put the food there. The rats go to the food, they are electrified, they don't go back again. I mean, they learn. And we have learned that negotiations without terms of reference agreed and without implementing what you agree is really just like an electric fence in a maze. You go, hit, and come back. You don't get anywhere. I mean, why would anybody go to further negotiations if every time you agree on anything, the stronger party does not implement? And therefore, because of this, we are asking Europe again, at a time when there is possible change. And let me give you three reasons for the change. One, the Arab Spring. I think that the Arab Spring has to be taken into consideration to speed up the process of solving the Palestinian problem. Otherwise, it will become a sore point with the new governments that will emerge in the Arab world, with, again, with the America and with Europe. And it might lead to a new flare-up of war between the Arabs and the Israelis, as it did many times, lately in Gaza. Two, the American elections. Okay, Mr. Obama has been re-elected. He has a new foreign minister who is quite reasonable, Mr. Kerry, and a new war minister who doesn't want to go to war, which is really a very important thing for the Minister of Defense of the United States, Mr. Hagel. And three, the Israeli elections, in which Mr. Netanyahu received a heavy blow, heavy blow. He still will manage to become the foreign minister, the prime minister, but he does not have the ability today to do what he used to do in the last four or five years. And he has an opposition, part of which wants him to go back to real negotiations and to solve the Palestinian problem. Some of them have other reasons for opposing him, but he is not anymore the impune, unaccountable king of Israel. He is more vulnerable to pressure. This is the time to put European and international pressure in order to get them back to real negotiations in which what you agree to is implemented and is made into a new real peace agreement. Because of these three reasons, I think we have a chance that in the second administration of Mr. Obama, in a Europe that is getting out, though slowly, from its economic problems, in an Arab world which is moving into its Arab Spring and potential for the future, and an Israel which is in doubt about how it can manage in the coming few months or so, there is an European opportunity and therefore a Portuguese opportunity to lead us back into peace. I will conclude with our commitments. We're still committed to that peace process. We're still committed to an independent Palestinian state side by side with the State of Israel across the border of 1967. We're still committed to going back to negotiations once Israel stops taking more of our land and admits that this is the time to conclude an agreement. And fourthly, we're still committed to continue our struggle in peaceful, non-violent ways. And I think winning international support has been a real substitute for violence, a real substitute for the call of despair. It created a new light, a new hope that we should be utilizing in pushing this time for real peace in our part of the world. If we come closer to peace, then Portugal may be able to play even an individual role, as Oslo had, as Norway has played it, as other smaller European countries has, in creating leverage for a second track negotiations that will allow the main track to proceed and sign an agreement. If this happens, we would really most welcome a Portuguese role that will push us closer to the day of freedom. I'm sorry I took a lot of your time, but thank you very much for listening.
Muito obrigado, Dr. Nabel Chad, pela sua intervenção e pelo detalhe das informações que nos deu. Eu agora dava a palavra a todos os representantes dos grupos parlamentares da Assembleia da República para formularem as questões que entenderem o Dr. Nabel Chad, o Partido Social Democrata.
شكرا لمدة خلتك ولمعلوماتك والآن بده يعطي الكلمة للمجموعات البرلمانية المختلفة.
سيرة ديبوتاد مونيكا فير فاشور.
Boa tarde. Eu queria começar por dar as boas-vindas na pessoa do nosso colega, o Sr. Nabel Chaf, não sei por... Okay. Sorry.
Não.
That's it. Queria começar por dar as boas-vindas. Esta comissão tem acompanhado com muita atenção a questão palestiniana. Nós recebemos cá vários dignatários vossos E ainda recentemente, como deve ter tido unidade de verificar, o Parlamento Português aprovou uma série de votos, congratulando-se com o upgrade do Estatuto da Palestina na Assembleia Geral das Nações Unidas. E eu queria apenas reiterar esse empenho que nós temos em acompanhar de perto o vosso processo de paz, em vos ajudar de todas as formas possíveis, não só a chamar a atenção para os vossos problemas, mas também para as possibilidades de paz que se abrem no vosso território. E, portanto, Senhor Deputado, caro colega, tem-nos aqui como mais um apoio para que a solução dos dois Estados vivendo lado a lado em paz e em segurança seja uma realidade.
Sr. Deputado Paulo Pisco, do Partido Socialista. Do Grupo Parlamentar do Partido Socialista.
Eu gostaria de dar as boas-vindas à nossa Comissão, ao Sr. Nabil Shah, ao Sr. Embaixador e toda a delegação palestiniana que o acompanha. Eu julgo que é uma grande honra para a nossa Comissão e para o Parlamento Português poder receber uma personalidade que tem acompanhado todo o processo há quase 50 anos. E, portanto, tem um conhecimento de todos os desenvolvimentos que têm havido, todas as esperanças que têm havido relativamente à criação do Estado da Palestina, como é uma das esperanças maiores do povo palestiniano. Permita-me uma nota pessoal, porque eu acho que o reconhecimento que agora foi feito pelas Nações Unidas da Palestina como Estado observador é um justo reconhecimento da comunidade internacional de um processo que tem que um dia terminar da melhor forma, que é a forma de haver dois Estados em paz e segurança ao lado um do outro, como tem sido o propósito da comunidade internacional, de grande parte da comunidade internacional. E gostaria de lhe dizer que é sempre para mim surpreendente ver o imenso otimismo que aqui foi reafirmado pelo Sr. Nabil Shah e a imensa esperança que o povo palestiniano tem em todo este processo, porque é de facto verdadeiramente surpreendente com tudo, todos os avanços e recuos que tem havido, com todo o sofrimento do povo palestiniano, com todo o sangue que já foi derramado, que essa esperança se mantenha tão viva. Como nós dizemos cá em Portugal, a esperança é sempre a última coisa a morrer e eu acho que a luta da Palestina é, de facto, o retrato fiel desse ditado português. Relativamente a este processo, eu tenho sempre algumas questões que gostaria sempre de ver esclarecidas e eu julgo que ninguém melhor que o Sr. Nabil Shah poderia ajudar-nos aqui a compreender melhor algumas das questões que eu gostaria de lhe colocar.
Eu gostaria de lhe colocar.
Uma delas é a viabilidade do Estado palestiniano no estado atual de ocupação dos territórios. A expansão sempre dos colonatos, que tem vindo a ser sempre condenada pelas Nações Unidas, por Portugal, evidentemente, ainda recentemente o nosso Ministro dos Negócios Estrangeiros fez uma condenação muito clara, evidentemente, também da expansão dos colonatos, mas também a descontinuidade do território, a divisão que existe entre Gaza e a Cisjordânia, de que forma é que este facto pode ser um obstáculo à viabilidade de um Estado palestiniano? E esta era a primeira questão que eu gostaria de deixar. Se acha possível que os cerca de 500 mil de colonos que existem na Cisjordânia alguma vez saírem, ou de que forma é que esse problema pode ser resolvido? Apesar de o Sr. Abel-Chá ter falado sobre as novas perspectivas que se abrem na sequência da vitória do Presidente Barack Obama e daquilo que espera da União Europeia, se poderia ser mais concreto relativamente àquilo que, que deveria ser o papel, de que forma se deveriam comportar os Estados Unidos e a União Europeia para poder fazer avançar mais o processo de paz. E, finalmente, gostaria de lhe perguntar como interpreta as palavras do primeiro-ministro Netanyahu, que na sequência do reconhecimento da Palestina como Estado observador nas Nações Unidas, disse que esse facto não iria ajudar à criação do Estado da Palestina, pelo contrário, que iria atrasar. É tudo e agradeço muito a sua presença aqui e tudo aquilo que nos tem aqui dito de forma simpática relativamente a Portugal.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Sr. Deputado Lino Ramos, do Centro Democrático Social, CDS, Grupo Parlamentar.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Presidente. Dar as boas-vindas ao Sr. Deputado à Casa da Democracia. Agradecer as palavras que nos trouxe sobre o seu país e sobre a democracia também. Dizer-lhe que o CDS evoluiu na visão e na solução de defensor da solução de dois Estados vivendo em segurança e em prosperidade. Reconhecer que esta votação na ONU é um pequeno passo, mas é um passo histórico na implementação desta realidade de dois Estados independentes e vivem em prosperidade. Mas mais passos são necessários dar neste sentido. Quer internamente, quer externamente. Esperemos que as próximas eleições no seu país sejam um passo no sentido da resolução de algumas situações internamente. E que a relação com Israel caminhe no sentido de diálogo e da paz. Notei que colocou grande expectativa no papel da Europa na resolução deste referendo. Disse, aliás, que a Europa pode e deve tomar parte. E sendo Portugal um país de vários pés, um país de princípios, um país de pontes, que expectativa tem exatamente nesse campo do nosso país? Que pontes é que pode estabelecer no sentido de contribuir para a paz nessa região?
Obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Por último, para concluir as questões que os Srs. Deputados querem formular, em nome dos grupos parlamentares, do grupo parlamentar do PCP, o Sr. Deputado Bruno Dias.
Sr. Presidente, Srs. e Srs. Deputados, eu quero começar por estender uma saudação calorosa ao Sr. Dr. Nabil Shahad, em nome do grupo parlamentar do Partido Comunista Português. Queria saudar o Sr. Embaixador Mufid Shami e demais membros da delegação da Palestina aqui presentes e reiterar, pela nossa parte, que é uma honra para a Assembleia da República receber um representante do Presidente, do Estado e do povo da Palestina. Quase exatamente 8 meses depois de, nesta mesma sala, vários senhores deputados de todos os partidos terem recebido aqui nesta mesma sala o Comitê das Nações Unidas para os Direitos do Povo da Palestina, com o embaixador Riad Mansour, o embaixador Diallo, o senhor embaixador Mufid Shami, em um conjunto de reuniões de grande interesse e importância. E procuraremos, dentro do possível, assistir à conferência que logo à tarde o Sr. Dr. Nabil Shahad vai dar na minha universidade. Registámos e congratulámos-nos com o avanço histórico da votação de 29 de novembro na Assembleia Geral das Nações Unidas. Sem perder de vista, em nenhuma ocasião, as questões fundamentais que têm que ser mantidas, como o regresso das populações refugiadas da Palestina. O fim e a inversão da política de colonatos do Estado de Israel. Retirada. O regresso às fronteiras anteriores em 1967 e a coexistência e o Estado palestiniano com capital em Jerusalém. Em dezembro passado, o Sr. Presidente Mahmoud Abbas, que honrou o nosso país com a sua visita, dizia que alguma coisa teria de acontecer depois das eleições que agora teriam lugar no Estado de Israel. E é nesse sentido que gostaríamos também de conhecer a vossa reflexão e a vossa perspectiva em relação ao contexto regional, que não é, digamos, simples, não é fácil, tendo em conta os recentes e lamentáveis acontecimentos e condenáveis acontecimentos que têm a ver com intervenções militares, nomeadamente de Israel em relação à Síria, num contexto da região. E nós consideramos que o processo de paz envolve o Estado de Israel e envolve a Palestina, mas envolve um processo de paz para a região que também deve ser objetivo de todos nós. E termino agradecendo mais uma vez e manifestando o nosso desejo de que, inclusivamente, na Assembleia da República em Portugal, possamos ter melhores condições para acompanhar e para intervir na ligação entre estes Estados e entre estes povos e que, provavelmente, poderemos ter, em breve, melhores condições para constituir, finalmente, o Grupo Parlamentar de Amizade entre Portugal e a Palestina, que é um objetivo que não deve ser esquecido.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Deputado. Sr. Dr. Nabel Chad, agora para responder, se o entender, faça o favor. Senhora Nabel Chad.
We very much like to host you when you come. We would like to see you form a parliamentary Portuguese-Palestinian committee that exchanges visits. And I think
we will do the same in Palestine.
We will do the same. We will create a Portuguese friendship society in Palestine that will really look at furthering our relationship. And finally, we assure you, if there is a chance for a third party to play a role, we will invest Portugal with it, because we have seen you.
Muito obrigado, Sr. Nabel Chad, Sr. Embaixador, Srs. Deputados, Srs. Membros da delegação. O Sr. Nabel Chad contagiou-nos com o seu entusiasmo, com a sua serenidade e com a sua esperança. Eu creio que todos aqui ficaram muito impressionados com a sua intervenção. E há um ponto de equilíbrio e de identidade entre nós que é muito grande. Portugal, o Estado português e os parlamentares portugueses estão identificados consigo nos desejos profundos de democracia, de paz e desenvolvimento para a Palestina. Nisso é um ponto de referência que nos identifica a todos e por isso agradecemos muito e sentimos muito gosto com a sua presença, tal como tivemos muita honra em receber há pouco tempo o Presidente Mahmoud Abbas aqui na Assembleia da República. Muito obrigado. Estão encerrados os nossos trabalhos. Obrigado.